Welcome to Soccer 101, the podcast where we scratch the soccer itches you never knew you had. This week, as we record, the 22nd edition of the UEFA Women's Champions League has kicked off. Lyon are the defending champions after humbling Barcelona in the final last season. Today, we're digging into the biggest domestic contest in women's soccer. We're looking at the format, the major players, the history of the competition, and the reasons you should be tuning in this season. My name's Ryan Bailey. Joining me are two fellows with the WCL skinny, Taylor Rockwell. Hello.
Hello.
Graham Ruthven. Hi.
Hi, Ryan Bailey.
Hi, Graham Ruthven. Graham, if you will, a little introduction to the Champions League, the Women's Champions League, I should say. What is it?
So this one is fairly self-explanatory because most, if not all, listeners will know what the Men's Champions League is and be familiar with that competition. And as the name suggests, the Women's Champions League is the women's soccer equivalent. So for anyone who doesn't know what the Champions League concept is, it's a pan-European competition that pits the biggest and best clubs from across the continent against each other. There are 16 teams involved in the group stages of this season's Women's Champions League, four groups of four. From there, you have the quarterfinals involving eight teams, as is customary, and then you have... the quarterfinals is made up of the top two teams from each group, and then you have semifinals, and then a single-legged final to crown a champion.
Marvellous stuff, Graham. And the competition proper has just kicked off this week. But there's a qualification process too, right?
Yeah, that's right. So as things stand, and the format of the Women's Champions League has changed quite a bit over the years as the women's game has grown in Europe, and the most recent change happened for the start of last season. So I would expect this to continue to change in the coming years. But as things stand, four teams automatically qualify for the Women's Champions League. Those four teams are comprised of the winners of the domestic titles of the three highest ranked leagues in terms of the coefficient and the reigning Women Champions League champions. So this season, those four teams are Lyon, Barcelona, Chelsea and Wolfsburg. The other 12 spots are decided through two rounds of qualifying. Seven are drawn from what is known as the Champions Path. And if you're, this is all very familiar, similar to the Men's Champions League. It's a little bit convoluted, so you might already know some of this because there is some overlap. So there's a Champions Path, and that is consisting of all those domestic title winners who do not gain direct entry to the group stage. So they would maybe be from lesser nations and leagues in terms of their coefficient ranking. The other five are drawn from what's known as the league path, which is the teams finishing second and third in the top six ranked associations, and also the runners-up of the next 10 highest ranked associations. Are you following? As I said, it's a convoluted system, but then the men's Champions League qualifying is also complex. What I would say about the Women's Champions League in its current format is that it feels like it's not quite big enough for some of the best teams to be involved every season. So one of the final qualifying matches this season was Manchester City against Real Madrid, and Real Madrid won, so they're in this season's Champions League. So that means no Man City in this season's Women's Champions League, when really, if we're honest with ourselves, they're good enough for that level. So the question is the depth there to go to 32 teams? I would like to see that, and I would argue that you get that depth by just jumping in at the deep end, and after a few seasons, if the depth isn't there, then it will be eventually. But you'll get some people who argue that that will dilute the competition. So the Women's Champions League used to be 32 teams until fairly recently. It was a straight knockout tournament, kind of like the old European Cup. They've now gone to this group stage and then knockout phase format similar to the Men's Champions League, but they have reduced the teams from 32 to 16 for this season.
Graham's done a really great job of laying out all those details, and it really is, because I wasn't aware of how they did their qualification. So learning about it was fascinating. It also seems really complicated. It gets really simple. It's like any board game. It's like once you're playing it, or any card game, once you're playing it, you sort of figure out how it works pretty quickly. But I love that it's 16 teams now. I think they started with 71 in total. So yeah, Graham, to your point, you have a ton of teams coming through who have to do these knockout round things. You have knockout groups as well in the early stages of the Champions Path, I believe. And so you end up getting lots of new teams that I don't know that much about, but then you do like end up losing some of those bigger teams that you would expect would provide a better standard of competition. Man City, obviously, chief among them. So yeah. It's a really interesting format, but I do agree with you. I think it probably changes in the short to medium term, as certain leagues get stronger, it will probably feel less and less fair to, or like, I don't know, less and less good for the competition itself to keep them out.
And Taylor, just to step back, in my intro, I called the Women's Champions League the biggest domestic contest in women's soccer. That's a fair assessment, right?
You mean basically it's between this and the NWSL?
Right.
Yeah, right. I would say it. I think if not already, it is quickly becoming that. Yeah, because you have so many different teams from so many different countries that it is just a grander spectacle. I think that said, all of those countries maybe fit inside the United States. I forget how big the U.S. is in relation to Europe. But I think for the small number of teams in the NWSL, the obvious issues going on with the league right now do factor into that in my mind, and I think factor into whether or not a player wants to go play for a team in the U.S. or stay and play for a bigger team in Germany or France or England. So I think if it isn't already there, it will quickly become the premier club competition. Yeah.
And Graham, jumping back to format and history of the format, the Women's Champions League has gone under a couple different names and a couple different iterations since 2001, has it not?
Yeah, so the UEFA Women's Cup existed from 2001 to 2009 and was actually a bigger competition in terms of the number of teams it involved than the Women's Champions League is at present. Involved 32 teams, as I mentioned. Once the rebrand happened in 2009, the Women's Champions League did actually have 32 teams for a long time, pretty much a decade, and it was a straight knockout competition. But if you look at some of the teams that were involved in the early stages of the Women's Champions League, you had Turbine Potsdam of Germany. They were the champions in the first season. And I do think that is quite interesting about some of the teams that have been successful in the Women's Champions League going back through the years, is that there wasn't the investment there from some of the big men's clubs. So now you've got, you know, Real Madrid investing a lot of money. Manchester United, they're not involved in the Women's Champions League yet, but they didn't have a women's team at all until maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and now they're investing in their women's team. But initially, it was up to women's, clubs that only have women's teams that are solely focused on women's soccer, like Turbine Potsdam of Germany, who have had a great deal of success. In Scotland, we have Glasgow City in this country. They're the most successful, historically the most successful women's team in Scotland. So that dynamic is changing, and so it's only natural that would have an impact on the Women's Champions League in that format. As I said at the top of the show, I expect that format will continue to change until they kind of find the right formula.
Yeah. And Graham, over the past decade or so, women's soccer in the US has certainly had its challenges. Has it been the same case for this European competition?
Yeah, so the biggest challenge for the Women's Champions League and its past iterations has been, I think, generally interest, and there not being enough of it. So things are changing in that regard, and we'll come on to talking about the growth that has happened in recent seasons, but the lack of investment, as I mentioned there, has been a problem until 2 years ago. Real Madrid didn't even have a women's team, which is ridiculous, and Manchester United as well, as I mentioned, they didn't have a women's team until fairly recently. And that lack of investment is reflected in the prize money. So the prize money for the Women's Champions League this season is €350,000 to the winning team, €200,000 to the losing finalists, €180,000 to losing semi-finalists, €160,000 to the losing quarter-finalists. And you also get €50,000 per group stage win, €17,000 per draw, and teams receive €400,000 for qualifying for the group stage. And the most you can earn from a single Women's Champions League campaign, so if you were in the group stage and you won every match all the way through on your way to winning it, you would earn just under €1 million, Euros, which is €990,000 overall. There's a total of €24 million available for distribution in the Women's Champions League. To contrast that to the Men's Champions League, where there is $2.7 billion available for distribution every season. So that's like 1%. It's not even 1% of that total number. So while there has been more investment in the women's game, and that's starting to bubble to the surface with the Women's Champions League, there's still a long, long way to go. So that is a big challenge.
Yeah, slightly different economic playing fields there. But as you say, Graham, heading in a positive direction. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's learn more about the historical champions of this competition, the teams to look out for, and who we should be looking out for in this current iteration. Back shortly.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Welcome back to Soccer 101. We are talking Women's Champions League. Taylor, talk me through some of the big players, past and present. Players, I mean teams.
I could do both if you want. I think Lyon is where we have to start. They are the most successful club in the Women's Champions League. They've won it 8 times. They've been runners-up twice, but they tend to win it quite a bit. They won it 5 consecutive times from 2016 to 2020. They're the current champions. They beat Barcelona in the 2022 final. They always have a ton of talent. This season, Ada Hegerberg is unavailable. Katarina Macario is also out with injury. Jennifer Marasan and Sarah DeBritz also not going to be there due to injury, and yet they are still one of the favorites to win it because they just have so much depth and so much talent. You get PSG spending more money and becoming a sort of also-ran in a lot of ways. They have yet to win it. They've been runners-up twice. Going back further, German clubs, as we've already talked about with Turbine Potsdam, historically quite good, quite successful. Frankfurt, chief among them, they've won it 4 times. So a few entries there in terms of who have been successful in the past and in the present.
Taylor, Barcelona went on that historic winning streak. Was it 2021, I think it was, or into 22? I was expecting to see them higher on the honors board in this competition.
Yeah, I think as Graham talked about with Madrid coming in late, with Man United coming in late, Barcelona, I wouldn't say as late as those two, but certainly not around as long as, say, Lyon. But they have come on leaps and bounds. When you talk about the sort of best teams or the most memorable individual teams, I would have them on that list. I think there's two that really stand out in my mind. They are one of them in that. That team that goes on to win the final 4-0 over Chelsea in a final. First of all, that's pretty emphatic. They knocked out Man City, PSG along the way. They feature the likes of Lika Martins, Caroline Graham Hansen, but then also Jennifer Hermoso, Alexia Putellas, Alexandra Bomati. Tons of talent from that Spain team that we now know much more about, I would say, because of this Barca team and how strong they were. So I think that is, though they haven't won multiple titles, that one that they did win, pretty memorable.
Yeah, and it feels like we kind of have a bit of a dynasty between those two clubs at the moment. So obviously Barcelona and Lyon play last season's final against each other. Lyon win that one, Barcelona win it the season before, and then obviously you have the streak of 5 wins from Lyon before that. But to me anyway, it feels like these are the two strongest two teams in European football right now. And if you look at the honours board of the Women's Champions League, there's some interesting stuff in there. So behind Lyon, you have Eintracht Frankfurt, who have won it 4 times. Umea from Sweden, who have won it twice. And then you have Wolfsburg, the aforementioned Turbine Potsdam, they've also won it twice. Arsenal are the only English team to have won the Women's Champions League. They won it all the way back in 2007, and Barcelona became the first Spanish team to win it last year. So I think I've said this a couple of times, it kind of feels like there's a shift happening in women's soccer, at the top of women's soccer anyway, in the Women's Champions League, and we might start to see some kind of more of the men's super clubs spending quite a bit of money to win this competition, and Barcelona have been one of the first to do that.
I know we're going to talk a bit about this year's competition. Graham, with that in mind, with the kind of super clubs being able to spend more, doesn't that feel a bit like a layup for Todd Boehly at Chelsea? That I think money goes so much further in the women's league, at least at present. That feels like one where he could splash a little bit of money, make them into just a juggernaut of a team. Maybe they already are, but I think you add a few more faces to that one, and they could be serious challengers this season. I wonder if that's a thing that he has considered.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if he has. Obviously, Chelsea are already a pretty decent team. Last season was disappointing for them. They didn't make out of the group stages, but two seasons ago, they made the final of this competition. They were the team that lost to that Barcelona, that great Barcelona side in the final. So there's a precedent for them doing well in this competition. And I think if you look at the English teams, I mean, the three English teams that potentially could win this thing, maybe not this season, but just speaking generally, are Chelsea, Arsenal and Man City. And it feels like Chelsea are maybe at the top of that list. So absolutely, I think Todd Boehly would be wise to invest more money into that Chelsea team. Obviously, they have spent big, you know, Sam Kerr going there. They've got Emma Hayes, who many would see as one of the best managers in the women's game right now. So they do have that platform, but it feels like they could replicate what Barcelona have done over the last few years.
So Graham, let me ask you a tricky question. If there was an equivalent of a European Super League breakaway in women's soccer, who would be like the ringleaders? Barcelona and Lyon, obviously you said two of the top teams there. Chelsea along with the ride. Who else would be in that pack, do you think?
PSG.
Yeah, so I think PSG, well, they have a strong team at the moment, and that French rivalry between PSG and Lyon is pretty strong. So PSG, Bayern Munich have spent a bit of money recently. Georgia Stanway going to Bayern Munich after the Euros. She was obviously part of that England team that won the Euros. Wolfsburg are a bit of a superpower in the women's game. NWSL team City and Arsenal. Juventus are the Italian champions in Italy as well, and they've really been riding that wave we've had in the last couple of years of big crowds. You know, last season and the season before, we saw the Camp Nou being sold out by Barcelona. Last season, they sold out a Clásico and a semi-final against Wolfsburg's in this competition. And Juventus have done similar. They've actually been getting better crowds than the men's team, which, you know, considering how they're doing at the moment, maybe isn't too surprising. But nonetheless, given the natural order of things, that is notable. So, I would say those teams are pretty much your... You're starting to get a reflection of the men's game now, and I don't know whether that's a good or a bad thing, but the clubs with the most money to spend are starting to rise to the surface.
Graham, but it does feel a bit to me like it's like, if you're talking about the Super League, it would be Lyon is like 1A, Barcelona I think at present is 1B, and then I think you've got some teams underneath them. But it is, like, I agree with everybody you listed there, it just still feels like a pretty sizable drop-off.
Yeah, I think that is fair. Barcelona, I could buy that they are 1A as well. I think they have the potential. They've been unlucky with injuries. So Patelis won the Ballon d'Or this week, but she's currently out injured, missed the Euros during the summer. So if she comes back, then Barcelona's level rises a little bit. I could buy that there are two teams on an equal footing, but you're right. Beyond that, there is a bit of a gulf.
All right, Taylor, looking at this year's contest, who are the major players? And once again, I'm using players when I should say teams. Who are the major teams?
I know what you mean. as I said, Lyon will still be in that conversation, though they do have, again, a number of very prominent players missing. But again, they have so much depth, so much talent, and also so many young players capable of coming through or making kind of that break that I think they will still be heavily involved in the knockout rounds. But it might not be their year if things don't go well. Barcelona still has Putellas out, as we've already talked about. They added Lucy Bronze, Kira Walsh, and Brazilian forward Gaysa from Real Madrid, which seems like maybe it turned some heads. So I think Barcelona
reverse
are...
Figo.
Exactly, right? Hopefully she does not get the same treatment that Figo did. So I think Barcelona are weaker in some ways, but stronger in others. I would expect them to still be pretty powerful in this competition. Graham mentioned Wolfsburg, who are sort of retooling, trying to kind of get back to like the level that they were at a few years ago. Lena Oberdorf being chief among those plans. She's 20 years old. She was the young player of the Euros, and I think will be a star performer for them. And then you've got PSG, although Marie-Antoinette Katoto is out with injury from the Euros. She's their all-time leading scorer. Their starting center back, their main center back, Paulina Dudek, also out for the season. So two key absences there. I would also point to Chelsea. I think Chelsea have done a good job in building their squad and kind of finding that stability. And I would say of the English teams involved in this, tough to write off Arsenal, but I think I would be watching a Chelsea game or two if I can.
Okay, and Graham, how about some of the key players in the league this season? We've mentioned a few names already, but say if I was looking at some of the European champion England players, it seems a lot of Manchester-based players, for example, not just at City.
Yeah, so Barcelona, I think Taylor might have mentioned this already, but Lucy Bronze and Kira Walsh going to Barcelona feels pretty significant. I'm a massive fan of Kira Walsh. I think she did get a bit of credit during the Euros, but not as much, in my opinion, as she should have as the base of that England midfield. And so I think you put her in that Barcelona team and she is going to improve. In fact, we saw this in the England-USA game that was played recently. Kira Walsh had this moment where she's inside her own box, and she just takes... I was panicking. I'm not English, and I was panicking watching her inside her own box, but that feels like the Barcelona influence already, where she's just so calm and composed in the ball, and she just kind of turned and found a pass out of trouble, and that was it, and away England went. So I'm a big fan of Kira Walsh. Georgia Stanway going to Bayern Munich as well as another significant move. Alex Popp is fit again for Wolfsburg, so she's there to bang in the goals. Taylor mentioned Katoto's out injured for PSG, but they have signed Leke Martins from Barcelona. So they are spending big still to try and keep up with the level that Lyon have. What I would say about the two WSL teams is that Chelsea have a difficult group stage draw. So they're in a group with PSG and Real Madrid. And on top of this, Emma Hayes is on leave at the moment due to a medical issue. So that's a tricky one. And then Arsenal are also in a difficult group with Lyon and Juventus. So it feels like, despite the fact that the two English teams do have a lot of quality, the group stage draws make it difficult for them to kind of build up any momentum. And it actually wouldn't surprise me at all if both of those teams went out early doors just because of how difficult those draws are.
Yeah. I don't know why. Arsenal-Juve is like one of my favorite jersey combinations. I really don't know why. But it feels like a good... proper combination of uniforms for football. So I look forward to that game. And Graham, I appreciate you noting some of the issues with Chelsea. I think they lost their opener to Liverpool this weekend.
Yeah.
And Liverpool on the women's side, certainly not nearly as strong as they are on the men's side. So that was a pretty sizable defeat for them.
Yeah. And in terms of the growth of the women's game in general, obviously in the US we might take for granted how popular the women's game is. But Graham, in Europe...
The league's failed multiple times, so I don't know if we should be taking anything for granted.
But I mean, in terms of the national program, terms of women's soccer being a culturally popular phenomenon, which it's not necessarily been in Europe, say even 5 years ago. And Graham, I think having watched the European finals in England this past summer and seeing pubs packed out to watch those games and seeing like my family members and friends packing out in people's houses to watch these games, which, as I say, 5 years ago, they wouldn't have done so. And I think the BBC and various networks have done a very good job of putting women's soccer front and centre. And it seems like the Women's Champions League is experiencing tremendous growth. We're seeing like sellout games in Spain, for example, domestically. And we're seeing, you know, the Women's Super League in England grow tremendously as well. It does seem like the curve is increasing at a positive rate.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the last year, I would say, year or two, has felt like a real watershed moment for women's football in Europe. Obviously, the Euros in the UK was massive, as you mentioned, Ryan. But I would argue it was happening before that tournament even took place. And as you mentioned, there were sellout crowds at the Camp Nou for Barcelona-Real Madrid games in that semi-final against Wolfsburg. There were sellout crowds at Juventus. Arsenal had close to 50,000 at a North London derby just a few weeks ago. And they'll actually be playing all their group stage games at the Emirates Stadium. So I think they're hopeful for some big crowds for those games as well. And there is a greater pressure on the big men's team to spend more on their women's team. And I do think that is making a big difference. There's much more of a focus now on making women's Champions League games and just women's games in general feel like an event. And that includes having games at some of the bigger men's stadiums like the Emirates. I think Manchester United have also played some games at Old Trafford and stuff like that. There's also some other factors. So from the start of last season, a new TV deal was struck with DAZN, and they hold the rights for the Women's Champions League for around the world. And even better than that, the matches are free to stream on YouTube. So basically what this is doing is it's just removing the barriers that used to exist to stop fans from going to games. It used to be the case that women's matches would take place at smaller stadiums that there wasn't the infrastructure around in terms of public transport, and it was more difficult to get to those games. Well, guess what? Now they're taking place in the bigger stadiums that do have those public infrastructure systems around them. And it used to be the case that it was difficult to find these games on TV. Well, guess what? If you've got an internet connection and you can get on YouTube, now you can watch these games. So the removal of those barriers is really significant. You also have sponsors jumping onto the Women's Champions League. So Adidas, they pay just as much to UEFA for its sponsorship of the Women's Champions League as it does the Men's Champions League. I think Visa does something similar. So, you know, you've got big multinational, globally recognizable brands starting to back the women's game in the Women's Champions League. And just this week, EA Sports became a partner of the Women's Champions League. And that means the Women's Champions League will be in FIFA. That's huge. That could be another transformational thing, because young fans often get into soccer through FIFA, and you would think this will surely draw more of them to women's football. So once you factor in all those different things, you get some explanation as to why the Women's Champions League is growing and growing.
Wonderful stuff. Always good to hear that FIFA and UEFA are going to make a bit more coin, Graham. You'd like to hear that.
Graham, indeed. Are they still splitting? Aren't we still losing? Like, isn't FIFA going to do its own thing? Like, how does that factor
yes.
into things?
I'm not sure, but that is happening. Yeah, that's that. The FIFA 23 is the last ever FIFA in its current iteration, meaning the last FIFA developed by EA Sports. And then from next year, it'll be EA FC. I think it's going to be EA Sports FC. So
weird.
There you go.
Still going to call it FIFA, though, aren't we?
The thing is, there's going to be another FIFA. Yeah. So Gianni Infantino says that they're going to make the best game ever, and it's going to blow the EA Sports one out of the water. I mean, you know, I don't believe him, but I look forward to see how that turns out.
While we're talking about things that Gianni Infantino has said, at the closing press conference for the Women's World Cup in France in 2019, President Gianni Infantino outlined a proposal for the creation of a Women's Club World Cup starting as soon as possible, and that is the last entry in the Women's Club World Cup Wikipedia page. So I don't know if we should totally trust what Gianni Infantino says all the time, especially because I think a Club World Cup is just a complete layup for getting eyes on the game, because so often we want to see NWSL teams playing the best teams from Europe in a competitive format, and we don't ever really get that. So I think that is one way in which the game could continue to grow. FIFA could make a lot more money, which is what FIFA always wants to do, because I think the Women's Champions League, I've already said it, is becoming, if not already, the biggest club competition on the women's side of the game. Probably on the men's side, too. Definitely on the men's side, too. So I think it's just going to get that interest increasing and growing, and I don't see it slowing down. And so I think anything you can do to then bridge that and make even more meaningful competitions, I think, is for the better, which is a strange thing to say about asking Gianni Infantino to create more competitions.
No, knowing how competitive UEFA and FIFA are against each other, and knowing what the kind of political situation is between those two organizations, it's surprising to me that UEFA haven't really floated the idea of inviting NWSL teams into the Women's Champions League, because that would then completely usurp anything that FIFA would come up with. If you've already got a competition that, as we've agreed, is maybe the biggest women's club competition in the world, just adding the NWSL in. And obviously there's other factors, you know, maybe fans don't want that. It wouldn't be a European competition then. You know, would you be the world champions? Would you be the European champions? There are other factors. But just in terms of the growth of the game and also the political situation, it wouldn't surprise me to see that being floated at some point.
That'd be a really fascinating test case for, we're going to invite the top two teams, I don't know, the regular season champions and the playoff champions to compete in next year's Women's Champions League, like subsidizing the travel or whatever. Because you then, as outlandish as that might seem, if you're UEFA, you are sort of taking control of that. And if you're adding, you could then make it like the Champions League of the world presented by UEFA. Like, I think there's a world in which that makes a lot of sense.
I'm not totally against that. I think that might actually be pretty decent.
Weird. Weird, wild stuff.
So aside from intercontinental competitions and Club World Cups, what do we see in the future for this competition, Graham? Do we see maybe greater parity with the men's game, maybe in terms of prize money? Where do you see this thing in, say, 10 or 15 years?
Yeah, I do think greater parity in terms of the prize money, not just the prize money, but the broadcast revenue as well. So UEFA has over the last 15 years, really, they've had this great effort to centralize everything. And I think we'll now start to see the merging of the women's and the men's Champions League in terms of the revenue and the money generated. It might not be complete parity from the start, but I do think we'll start to see the gap start to narrow, because there's pressure on organizations for them to do that now. The reason Adidas and Visa and all these brands do it is because obviously there's good PR in it for them to do it, and there is that public pressure. So I think we'll see that. I do also wonder if UEFA could somehow integrate the men's and the women's Champions League in a sporting sense as well. So this idea would need some finessing, but how about we have the men's and the women's and the men's teams playing on the same night with the same ticket for both games? Or maybe a more workable idea would be to have them play on back-to-back nights with the same ticket. So it's just about, again, removing those barriers to as many fans as possible. If you've got a ticket to go and watch Arsenal in the Champions League on a Tuesday night, you also get into the Women's Champions League game on a Wednesday night. And I know it doesn't line up perfectly because there's different teams in the men's and the women's Champions Leagues, but where possible, I would like some form of integration there. So that would be one idea. UEFA, they can't get complacent with the growth of the last few years, because there's still a lot of ground to make up. So you still need to have slightly different ideas, maybe a little bit more innovation than you would have in the men's game, which is obviously a little bit more established. But there's certainly reason to be optimistic.
Yes, there is indeed. And listener, we remind you that you can watch these games on DAZN on YouTube. Which is great. As Graham mentioned, there's a fewer barriers to access to get to see this competition. Taylor, my final question for you. Give me the elevator pitch. Why should I watch this season's UEFA Women's Champions League?
I think the best argument for me would be the same as why you shouldn't just watch the Men's World Cup or the Men's Euros and then not watch anything else, because you miss players developing in the years between those competitions, but also because so often we want to see the best players playing on the same teams, and you get that sometimes on the national teams, but then you get them leaving their national teams and coming together to make an even better club team. And when you have all the reps that you get when they play at club level, you're then getting probably the best football you can see on the women's side of the game in those clubs playing against each other in a knockout competition like the Champions League, where there's a lot at stake, increasingly a lot at stake, as Graham pointed out, with all the money coming in. So I think there's just, you get the talent, you get the competitiveness, you get new clubs that are sort of developing at the same time as you get the kind of the old, bigger clubs that we've come to know also developing. And so I think it's just a very exciting time to tune in.
Very exciting indeed. And Taylor, very exciting talking to you on this Soccer 101 episode. Thank you so much for your contributions.
Thank you so much.
Graham, same thing to you, but your name instead of Taylor's.
Thank you, Ryan Bailey.
And listener, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Soccer 101. We'll be back once again with another one on the feed very shortly. Thank you again. But for now, catch you later.